Petra. Well, good morning, everyone. Great to see you all. Great to be with you for another week. I don't know if you're like my family. We woke up at 4:30 this morning to. We're a sporty family and we love the Olympics. So I've been up since about 4:30 to watch Ariane Titmus, our own Tassie girl, win gold. So if I fall asleep during my sermon, it's not you, it's just me, and I've woken up early. But today we turn our attention to the ninth commandment. The ninth commandment, it says, "You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor." Well, sometimes that's easier said than done. Was anyone here a fan of Seinfeld? Did anyone used to watch Seinfeld, the sitcom in the 1990s? Not many of you. Okay, well, look, there's a. Hopefully, you recognize the faces up on the screen. Seinfeld was about the top-rating comedy in the late 90s. And in one episode, the four main characters are invited to a weekend away at a sort of holiday home with some friends. Now, these friends have a newborn, but the baby isn't very easy on the eye, to put it politely. And so when the main characters meet the baby, two of them, Jerry and Elaine, up in the picture there, you can see, they turn and shield their eyes while trying to grasp for something remotely positive to say. You see, they don't want to lie, but nor do they want to be honest, because the baby's ugly. And so they don't know what to say. Then in the next scene, this handsome doctor enters the stage. And he looks at Elaine, the main female character there, and he compliments her. When he sees her, he remarks, "Breathtaking." Now, Elaine's thrilled by the compliment, and it brings a smile to her face, but only momentarily. Because in the next sentence, this dashing doctor turns to the baby and uses the very same word to describe it. Breathtaking. Now, the hilarious yet palpable doubt created by the doctor's word illustrates a principle we all intuitively know, that our speech reveals our character. Is that doctor handsome? Yes. But can you trust him? No. We heard from Jesus in our gospel reading just a moment ago, draw a direct line from our hearts to our mouths. Jesus said, I think it was Matthew 12, verse 34, he says, "A tree is recognized by its fruit, for the mouth speaks what the heart is full of." And so it's for this reason that we all need the instruction of the ninth commandment. Jerry Bridges was a well-known Christian author. He once wrote a book called Respectable Sins. Now, before it was published, while he was writing it, you know, some of his other Christian friends would ask, "Well, what are you working on at the moment?" And he would tell them, "Well, I'm working on a book about respectable or acceptable sins that Christians tolerate." Now, Bridges said the most common, or the immediate response most commonly was, "Oh, you mean like gossip?" So it seems that sins of the tongue were invariably the first thing that came to mind for these Christians. Sins of the tongue can be one of those less obvious sins that we fail to see in ourselves or even indulge in without a sense of the seriousness of our wrongdoing. Perhaps if we grew a nose like Pinocchio, we might be a little more concerned. But even if we sometimes tolerate them, God certainly doesn't. In fact, the consequences of our words are very serious. Listen again to Jesus' words from this same gospel reading we've just heard, this time verse 36. Jesus says, "I tell you, that everyone will have to give an account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. For by your words you'll be acquitted, and by your words you'll be condemned. So the consequences of our words are very serious indeed. We're all going to have to give an account for every word we've ever spoken on Judgment Day. And if we neglect to bear true witness, as the ninth commandment demands of us, then our words will bear witness against us in the courtroom of heaven. Now, it's no coincidence that Jesus utters his words using language from the courtroom. You see, the reason is that the ninth commandment itself had the courtroom in view. In the first instance, this ninth commandment concerned perjury, lying in a courtroom. You see, when this commandment refers to not giving false testimony, the first context it had in mind was the place where false evidence or misleading evidence or testimony can count the most, the courtroom. And so, like many of the other Ten Commandments, this ninth commandment was firstly about promoting social justice, a fair society. You see, in ancient times, there weren't any fingerprints. There was no DNA testing back in those days. This is long before the days of technology. And so the justice system relied solely on eyewitness testimony. And so someone's guilt or innocence could only be established on the basis of corroborating testimonies of two or three witnesses. Now, the stakes were also often very high because, as I'm sure many of you have read the Old Testament before, and you'll know that the penalty for many crimes was the death sentence. And so if you lied in a courtroom, it meant that you could put someone else's life in jeopardy. Your testimony could determine the course of the person's whole life, and even death. And so the ninth commandment makes clear that our testimony about other people is precious because those people are precious. And so truth in speech, and especially in a court of law, is a fundamental condition of a fair society. Now, what we see in the Ten Commandments is the commandments often giving us the worst possible example of sinning, the most extreme kind of form of sinning in some way. So things like murder or stealing and so on. And so we can think of the Ten Commandments a bit like the orange flags marking the boundaries of a ski slope. You see, they remind us where it's not safe to tread, because beyond them, we'll fall off the edge of a cliff. And so even if most of the commandments are framed in negative grammar, they actually promote a positive morality. You see, they show us where it's safe to tread so that we and others can be truly free to enjoy God's good world. There's lots of room to ski down the slope. But as with the other Ten Commandments, these extreme examples in the Ten Commandments aren't the only way that we can break the essence of God's law. And so although this ninth commandment begins with false testimony in the law courts, it actually has wider application too. And as we turn to the pages of the New Testament, we see that, in fact, the whole world takes on the status of a court of law. So, for example, In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus attached the same seriousness to all speech, inside and outside the courtroom. He said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. In other words, any yes or no that we speak ought to carry the force of an oath taken in court. You see, what counted for Jesus was a commitment to the simple principles of truth, of honesty. And so truth in our speech matters because even though we might never be called to testify in a court of law, the testimony we bear about our neighbours in everyday moments will still shape their lives, for good or for ill. And so it's super important to rightly represent others in both their presence and their absence. And so the ninth commandment in the second instance was about respecting reputations. Just as we're not to take our neighbor's life or wife or stuff, so too we're not to take his or her good name, their reputation. Because just think about it for a moment. If you lose your home or your car or your, you know, you're scammed of all the money in your bank account, you can probably, well, I mean, if you lose your stuff, other people will usually feel sorry for you. And they'll rally around you. They'll chip in. They'll love us. They'll love you. They'll help you get back on your feet. But if you lose your good name and reputation, no one wants to touch you. So most of us can probably recover more quickly from losing our home or car or bank balance than if we lose our name. A good name can take a lifetime to build, but can be lost in an afternoon. Our reputations are important. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 1, I think it'll come up on the screen, says, a good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. And so just as the third commandment calls us to respect and protect God's name, so this ninth commandment calls us to respect and protect our neighbor's name out of love. I've already looked at the sin of perjury. Let me apply this ninth commandment to the other sins of the tongue in our everyday speech now. So firstly, there's the sin of reviling. Reviling is to criticize someone in an abusive manner or, you know, with angry insults. It's like spraying bullets with words. Now, I'm sure none of us are immune to the way even keyboards these days have become fully loaded weapons. We see reviling regularly online. People tearing down the good names of public figures, of half-decent politicians, even pastors. Perhaps it's the lack of face-to-face interaction that emboldens people to say things online that they would never say if the person was standing right in front of them. But we can also revile in our use of sarcasm with a wink and a laugh. We parents can revile in correcting our children by shaming them, perhaps with our tone or perhaps with our choice of words. Next is the cousin of reviling, the sin of gossip. So gossip's passing on a rumor, and even if you're not sure if it's true. But it's more than that. See, gossip is also passing along things that are true, but just aren't necessary for others to know. And so the end result's still the same. Another person's reputation is tarnished. Usually in gossip, people are blamed for their mistakes, or their failings are exaggerated, or negative things are said about them unfairly. But we human beings love gossip. We love secrets. Sometimes it's an easy way to make intimate relational connections over secrets, to be on the inside, especially juicy bad ones. The other cousin of reviling is the sin of slander. Slander goes one step further again than gossip. It's deliberately passing on what's false. So we don't have to be in a court of law to give false testimony about someone. We can say damaging things about someone in a coffee shop. Now, slander includes, it also includes assuming the worst possible motive in others. That's very easy to do, especially when we're hurt. You see, something happens, something said, and then rather than giving the other person the benefit of the doubt, and perhaps ask some questions to clarify, we assume the worst of them. And then we go and tell our other friend, and we pass it along as truth. But at that point, we need to ask ourselves, well, are we actually giving a true witness to our other friend or brother or sister in Christ? Moving on, we can add to the sin of slander the sin of libel, which is basically the written version. It's writing falsely about someone. It's defamatory. You see, what we say of a coffee we can also write on social media. It may not result in a legal verdict, but it can still result in a communal verdict. It's that trial by Twitter effect. You know, an allegation is made, and then suddenly it gets 4,000 retweets. But then 24 hours later, the facts are established and a retraction is made. But yet the retraction only gets 300 retweets. But sadly, bad news travels faster than good. And so by the time that the retraction comes, it's too late for the reputation of the person accused. Well, if the sins of reviling and gossip and slander and libel rob people of their reputation with bullet-like words, other ways are more subtle. Other sins of the tongue are more like a pickpocket of reputations. You see, for example, flattery. Flattery, compared to, say, slander, flattery doesn't seek to misrepresent someone by ripping them down, but by insincerely building them up. It's manipulation masked as praise. The Pharisees tried this one on Jesus. They said, they called him, you know, they hated him. They came to trap him, but they'd say, "Good teacher, we know you're a man of God. We know you don't care about the opinions of others." They'd sugarcoat their hatred of him. And then they'd ask, "But tell us, do we need to pay our taxes to Caesar?" Donald Trump's a classic contemporary example. I heard him just the other day lavishing praise on the great evangelist, the late Billy Graham. See, politicians from all sides of the spectrum flatter to win votes. Another pickpocket of reputation is the sin of misattribution. Some of you might be students. Plagiarism is an obvious one. It's easier than ever to copy and paste off the internet. But even if you're a boss or a manager, perhaps, we can still be a false witness by taking credit for someone else's idea at work. You see, what it does is exalt our names, but conceal someone else's. It's very subtle, but it still has the same end result. It has a detrimental reputation, impact on their reputation. In a similar way, the sin of silence can subtly rob someone of their reputation. Now, there's certainly times for silence, especially if we don't know all the facts, or perhaps we're angry and we want to slander and revile. Then it's better to hold our tongue. But other times, our sin isn't what we do say, but what we don't say, what we fail to say. Let's go back to the thing about gossip. You see, gossip is wrong, but also listening to gossip is wrong. And so, as awkward and difficult as it can be, there may be times when we need to speak up, when we're hearing something that may be gossip, to, and we know is wrong, to protect and respect someone else's reputation. And so, as difficult and awkward as it is, we might need to say, hang on just a moment. I'm not sure we know all the facts here. And I'm not sure if we should be having this conversation right now. Now, you'll put it 100 times better than that, but you know what I mean. It takes courage to speak up sometimes. But sometimes our silence in the face of gossip can be as sinful as the gossip itself. Now, the last sin of the tongue that we'll look at is the sin of lying. The old saying, sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never hurt me, just isn't true. Lies hurt people badly. Satan's the father of lies. And what he does is he presents the bait to us, but he hides the hook. And so we can all be tempted from time to time to lie to somehow benefit ourselves, perhaps to protect our own honour, sometimes to avoid punishment or maintain a boast or win an argument, other times to rip someone off. Yet when we're tempted to lie about others, we need to remember that God can read our poker face, even if the other people can't. So Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25 says, therefore, addressed to Christians, therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbour. Lies have no place in the Christian life. Speaking truthfully is important because it's the nature of God himself. It's part of his character. God never lies. It's one thing he can't do, one of the things he can't do. Jesus said, I am the truth. Yet people attacked his reputation. At his trial, people gave false testimony against him, leading him to the cross. Yet even under that extreme pressure, Jesus obeyed where we've often failed. The Apostle Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 22, he says, "He," Jesus, "committed no sin, and no deceit was found in his mouth." Christ died in our place to bring forgiveness for every lie of ours. And Christ is now, the risen Christ, is now our witness, our true witness, before the devil. And he calls on us to be his true witnesses in the world. In Acts chapter 1, verse 8, the disciples are told, "You will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." And we're now called to proclaim the truth. The truth of the gospel. And so our words must be trustworthy at all times. Otherwise, well, how will people ever believe us when we want to give them the words of life? Why should they trust us to speak about, when we speak about eternal things, if they can't trust us to speak about earthly things? So, brothers and sisters, there's almost nothing more important than living our lives as faithful witnesses. Let me leave you with this question. Will you speak truth? Amen.